from deep inside your radio.
Have to oil that chair. Ladies and gentlemen, from just a couple miles west, north, we don't know directions here, of Pleasure and Humanity Streets in New Orleans. And to answer the age-old question, it depends which direction you're going, whether pleasure comes before humanity or humanity comes before pleasure. But this is New Orleans, and we are... Oh, before that, before I say that, I always forget to do this, so I'm not going to forget to do this. I want to remind you, with some measure of time, about MyDamnChannel.com, which has been good enough to tell me and a few other folks in the entertainment business what we all yearn to hear, which is, do what you want. And so if you go there now, you'll see a series of music videos that I've done by the proprietor of this broadcast, I should say. The one that's premiered this week is a video of Waterboarding USA, a song you may have heard on this broadcast before, but you've never heard it like, and you've never seen it like this, MyDamnChannel.com. And coming up, some entirely different things that we've been, my little team and I have been recording in New Orleans the last couple weeks. So you'll see New Orleans as you've not seen it on the news. No, we didn't have Anderson along. That's one reason why. Anyway, we are the guinea... the address is MyDamnChannel.com. We are the guinea pigs, ladies and gentlemen. You saw the report this week, perhaps, from British researchers that certain artificial food colorings and additives can worsen or trigger hyperactive behaviors in children aged 3 to 9. Tests on more than 300 children showed significant differences in their behavior when they drank fruit drinks spiked with a mixture of fruit colorings and preservatives. Adverse effects are not just seen in children with extreme hyperactivity, but can also be seen in the general population and across the range of severities of hyperactivity. The stuff included sunset yellow coloring. That sounds so nice. Also known as E110. Carmoisine, tartrazine, ponseo, sodium benzoate, and other colors. One of the two mixtures contained ingredients commonly drunk by young children in Britain in popular drinks. And both mixtures significantly affected the older children as well. To which one could only respond, never too late, department. How many generations of kids have drunk that stuff now? And now we have a population that can't focus on the fact that we're in a war? Because, whoa, Lindsay Lohan just went by. But we are the guinea pigs. ConAgra Corporation has decided to drop diacetyl, a flavoring it adds to its microwave popcorn, only because doctors have indicated there may be a raised risk of developing bronchiolitis obliterans, a type of lung disease. It sounds so nice. ConAgra is the largest maker of microwave popcorn in the world, so they would be the largest cause, theoretically, of bronchiolitis obliterans. People who work in popcorn factories have been known to develop the disease. Diacetyl is a natural byproduct of fermentation, but it's inserted to, among other things, to give beer or wine a slippery feel. Don't want your beer or wine sticking to you. At higher levels, one can taste a butterscotch flavor, according to Medical News Today. Diacetyl is in popcorn to give it its butter taste, because, of course, you don't want to be eating popcorn. You don't want to be eating butter. You don't want to be eating popcorn either, but, you know, butter could, don't know what it could do, but this stuff can give you bronchiolitis obliterans. What are our friends in Pakistan up to? More than 80% of suicide bombers in Afghanistan are recruited and trained in Pakistan, according to the UN, coming out today. Most of the suicide bombers are poor, young, and uneducated, and many are Afghan. The report was based in part on interviews with failed suicide attackers. Well, you know, they're not going to get 72 virgins, but they will get debriefed. The phenomenon of suicide attacks in Afghanistan is inherently linked to a variety of structures and institutions across the border in Pakistan, said the report. 80%, over 80% of bombers pass through training facilities in the Waziristan section of Pakistan. Pakistan has also experienced a recent surge in suicide attacks from people trained in Pakistan. But they at least don't have to cross the border. That must be rough, crossing that border. The report also said the bombs were not claiming more lives per attack, suggesting little sustained innovation. These damn suiciders can't innovate. That's the good news. And, ladies and gentlemen, from the buried lead department, you're hearing so much, and we all are, about Al-Anbar province. That's where the president parachuted in this week to point with pride, to say the surge is working because the sheikhs, the Sunni sheikhs in Anbar province decided to, they got tired of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which another report suggested this week has all of 500 members. Ooh. So the sheikhs turned against them. And we, the president and General Petraeus are now pointing with pride to that as a mark that the surge is working. The Washington Post says in a story about this, why the sheikhs turned remains a point of debate. But it seems clear that tribes resented Al-Qaeda's efforts to ban smoking and marry local women. So that may be all it was about. The sheikh who created the alliance with the Americans traced the decision to fight Al-Qaeda in Iraq back to September 14th of last year, long before the surge began. But here's the buried lead, down way down here, even below that. Long before the tribes switched sides, the administration conducted a policy exercise on how to team up with former insurgents. But when such an alliance actually occurred, it bubbled up from the ground with no Washington involvement. Quote, Condoleezza Rice, in an interview to an Australian newspaper last week, quote, "We're not smart enough to know the course that these matters might take," unquote. Hello, welcome to the show. From the edge of from the edge of Lake Pontchartrain. That's where we are. From the Third Coast. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for News of the Warm. Much of it this week. And it's not so soft.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Climate change and unregulated irrigation projects are becoming major drivers for redrawing maps, according to the authors of a renowned atlas coming out in a new edition. We can literally see environmental disasters unfolding before our eyes, says Mick Ashworth, the editor-in-chief of the London Times Comprehensive Atlas of the World. We have a real fear that in the near future, famous geographical features will disappear forever. The new edition, just 4 years after the previous one, has had changes because of environmental changes, even more than in the past. Rather than just one or two, says Jethro Lennox, the publishing editor, you have a half a dozen major examples of how human activities are causing changes in our maps. Lake Chad in Africa has shrunk by 95% since 1963 because of a combination of failing monsoons and human overexploitation. And the Dead Sea is 25 meters lower than it was 50 years ago, largely due to uncontrolled irrigation. But more on the subject of warm. The federal government needs to do a better job addressing how climate change is transforming the hundreds of millions of acres under its watch, according to a Government Accountability Office report released this week. The report highlights the extent to which global warming is already affecting the nation's parks, forests, marine sanctuaries, and monuments. It's a statue. No, not that kind of monuments. GAO officials gathered reports of dramatic changes across the nearly 30% of U.S. land under federal control. Since 1850, the glaciers in Glacier National Park have declined from 150 to 26. Think a name change is coming. Used to be Glacier National Park. Climate-triggered coral bleaching in the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary is eroding the area's tourist appeal. For the most part, the men and women overseeing these 600 million acres of land, as well as 150,000 square miles of protected waters, have little direction on how to respond to these shifts, according to the GAO report. These managers, quote, have limited guidance about whether or how to address climate change and therefore are uncertain about what action, if any, they should take. There's more. The Arctic ice cap is melting faster than scientists had expected. Will shrink 40% by 2050 in most regions, with grim consequences for polar bears, walruses, and other marine animals, according to government researchers at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So we better get some more Coca-Cola up to those polar bears if they're going to survive. The Arctic sea ice will retreat hundreds of miles farther from the coast of Alaska in the summer. That will open up vast waters for fishermen, easier access for oil and gas exploration, and an upheaval in species, bringing new predators to warmer waters and endangering those that depend on ice. These calculations say that without drastic changes in greenhouse gas emissions, Arctic sea ice will disappear almost entirely by the end of the century. But these calculations for 2050 are based largely on the carbon dioxide that's already in the atmosphere. That will happen regardless of future curbs on emissions, says the author of the report. I'm afraid to say a lot of impacts we will see in the next 30 to 40 years are already pretty much established. It's not just polar bears. A rare European leech is headed towards extinction as global warming dries out the Austrian forest home of the tiny beast, scientists said this week. Researchers at German and Austrian universities found only one juvenile leech in birch forest near Graz, Austria. In searches from 2001 through 2005, they'd found 20 specimens in the same forests in the 1960s. So, man beats the leech. They feed on earthworms. UN studies say the world may be facing its worst wave of extinction since the dinosaurs vanished. The leech habitat was broadly intact. So that's why scientists point the finger at warming. The world's dams are contributing millions of tons of harmful greenhouse gases and spurring on global warming, according to a U.S. environmental agency. Rotting vegetation and fish found in dams produce surprising amounts of methane, 25 times stronger than carbon dioxide. Often it's accepted that hydropower is a climate-friendly technology, but in fact, probably all reservoirs around the world emit greenhouse gases, and some of them, especially some of the ones in the tropics, emit very high quantities of greenhouse gases, in some cases even much worse than fossil fuels like coal and gas, says Patrick McCulley of the International Rivers Network. And it's not just polar bears and leeches. Penguins are in danger. In the late 1920s, there were 250 breeding pairs at the bleak landscape of Heard Island in the bitterly cold Southern Ocean. In 2000, the colony was less than 20 pairs, says a researcher, and grass had started growing around the edge of the colony. There's signals that there's a worrisome future for the world's 17 species of penguins. They face serious population decreases throughout their range. The research team writes in the Conservation Status of the World's Penguins, a report this week at the 6th International Penguin Conference. The researchers use words unusual in scientific discourse, quote, grim progression, disconcerting decrease, and dire. They conclude unless scientists, governments, conservation groups, and the public take immediate action to reverse the trend, penguin populations will plummet. Many species face extinction. So let's make a couple more animated movies about them before they go, just so we can remember. And finally, in news of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, because it has been a big week for it, the Greenland ice cap is melting so quickly that it's triggering earthquakes as pieces of ice several cubic kilometers in size break off. Scientists monitoring events this summer say the acceleration could be, quote, catastrophic in terms of sea level rise, and make February's predictions by the climate change panel of the UN far too low. One glacier at Ilulissat, supposedly spawning the iceberg that sank the Titanic, is now flowing three times faster into the sea than it was 10 years ago. We have seen a massive acceleration of the speed with which these glaciers are moving into the sea, says a researcher, chairman of the Arctic Climate Impact Assessment Group, in fact. He says the ice is putting enough fresh water into the sea in 1 year to provide drinking water for a city the size of London for a year. Now, you know what I say, tow it down here. Cool off those hurricanes. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. It's cheery, isn't it? We're doing, who says man can't accomplish great things? As long as you define great as big and dire. Now, let's in the few hours waiting, remaining before the drumbeat of the Petraeus Report, so-called, begins, let's examine what other reports have been issued about Iraq lately. The U.S. military's claim that violence has decreased sharply in Iraq in recent months has come under scrutiny, according to the Washington Post, from many experts in and outside the government. They contend some of the underlying statistics are questionable and selectively ignore negative trends. Now, why would the government do that? What possible... Those who looked at the full range of government statistics on violence accuse the military of cherry-picking positive indicators and caution that the numbers, most of which are classified, are often confusing and contradictory. But let's dig a little deeper. Says the Comptroller General, David Walker, he's the head of the Government Accountability Office, let's just say there are several different sources within the administration on violence, and those sources do not agree. The GAO, of course, issued its own report on Iraq, which was kind of grim. The GAO used methodology also used by the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency. The military disagrees with that methodology. Once again, it's the military versus the CIA. Can't those guys all get along? The CIA and the DIA have their own problems with military calculations. They puzzle over how the military designate attacks as combat, sectarian, or criminal, according to a senior intelligence official in Washington. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is where the rubber really hits the road. Quote, if a bullet went through the back of the head, it's sectarian. If it went through the front of the head, it's criminal. Unquote. That's how you get a reduction in sectarian violence. The National Intelligence Estimate said it was a worrisome trend, escalating warfare between rival Shiite militias in southern Iraq. But these attacks are not included in the military statistics because of lack of capability to accurately track Shiite on Shiite and Sunni on Sunni violence. So the spokesman for the Pentagon says, we do not track this data to any significant degree. The U.S. troop surge in Iraq has been accompanied by a similar surge in the amount of funds devoted to Iraqi reconstruction, with just as debatable an effect, says the BBC. By the end of last year, Washington had provided $37 billion to help rebuild Iraq's shattered infrastructure, yet they have electricity less than 6 hours a day in Baghdad. The total has swollen in the last 6 months to $44.5 billion. But ordinary Iraqis have seen no benefit from this, says the BBC. Baghdad's electricity ministry recently warned the national power grid was close to collapse. Water supplies in Baghdad have been cut off for days at a time. The inspector general of the Iraqi reconstruction, told BBC that endemic corruption amounted to a, quote, second insurgency in Iraq. But there's another reason for the faltering relief effort. There's a huge decline in Iraqi funds for Iraqi reconstruction, which probably completely negates the increase in U.S. financial support. Says the BBC, that decline in Iraqi contribution to its own reconstruction is probably due to the serious problems that continue to plague the Iraqi oil industry. Hey, that was supposed to pay for the war, that industry. Let's ask Paul Wolfowitz what happened to that, because he was the guy that said that. And finally, in another report, the final independent report to be released before the Petraeus report, so-called, a panel of experts that was originally assembled for the Iraq Study Group, the so-called Baker-Hamilton Group, reassembled itself under the auspices of the U.S. Institute of Peace. They call for a 50% reduction in U.S. forces in Iraq within 3 years and a total withdrawal and handover to the Iraqi military in 5 years. That's what's going to be the soon option, ladies and gentlemen. 3 to 5 years. That's not the long ball option. Says the report, the United States faces too many challenges around the world to continue its current level of effort in Iraq, or even the deployment that was in place before the surge. These are many of the experts who advise the Iraq Study Group. The White House blocked the reconvening of the Baker-Hamilton panel by urging Baker not to participate. The Institute of Peace, which is funded by Congress, then reconvened the experts who had advised it. This group met through the summer, made up of 24 former U.S. officials and ambassadors, former CIA analysts, and Iraq specialists from think tanks and universities. The situation remains fluid, says the report, but a window has opened fleetingly for Iraq to proceed with political reconciliation. Iraq's national politicians have been unable to take full advantage of this opportunity, says the report from the U.S. Institute of Peace. Who knew? Who knew we had one? And in contrast to a growing number of recent calls for various forms of breaking up Iraq along religious and ethnic lines, this report rejects partition, but leaves the question of decentralizing power to the Iraqis. Just a little background for you, ladies and gentlemen, as the deadline for the arrival of the so-called Petraeus report nears. And now, in a cheerier tone, only in New Orleans. This was the week that political officials in Louisiana had to sign up to qualify for if they were going to run for office in the Louisiana off-year elections. And the mayor of New Orleans made appearances on both television and radio on Thursday, the deadline day for qualifying, and asked persistently on both radio and television whether he was going to file to run for governor of Louisiana. The mayor of New Orleans said, well, we got until 5 o'clock this afternoon to see what happens, teasing them throughout the day. Of course, he didn't run. The only premise, now he's the mayor of New Orleans. You get north of New Orleans, the rest of Louisiana would love if New Orleans just floated out into the Gulf. Just culturally different. They're Protestant, New Orleans is Catholic. They're rural, New Orleans is urban, blah, blah, blah. So the only premise upon which a mayor of New Orleans could credibly be a candidate for governor of Louisiana is, hey, man, I screwed up New Orleans. So that was what I thought might be in the mayor's mind. Meanwhile, some interesting people did decide to jump into the political campaigns down here, and in two different cases, sons are running against fathers for the father's political office. It's happening in Jefferson Parish, west of New Orleans. But most interesting to me, it's happening in St. Bernard Parish. St. Bernard Parish is a white flight parish east of New Orleans. It was the place where the TV cameras didn't go after the flooding, because it was so much easier to get to downtown New Orleans than to drive over these unfamiliar roads, many really kind of washed out by the flooding, to St. Bernard Parish, where more than 90% of the housing was devastated. The only difference is that if you only shot downtown New Orleans, you thought that black people were the main victims. If you got to St. Bernard Parish, you saw a white flight parish that, as I say, was totally, had almost in its entire housing stock removed from the planet. So, which is one reason why the network, television networks got the story so darn right. Anyway, parishes are counties, and the counties have presidents. So the president of St. Bernard Parish is a big, middle-aged gentleman by the name of Junior Rodriguez. And this week, Junior Rodriguez's son announced he was going to run for the office of parish president against his dad. His dad said he had no idea this was going to happen. So down here, it's going to be Junior versus Junior Junior. But at least in Louisiana, or at least in this part of Louisiana, they're not flying Confederate flags anymore.
Southland, land of cotton and loam. Losers got to have a place to call home. Secession, well, it's the source of our pride, 'cause our kinfolk were on the losing side. Yeah, our kinfolk were on the losing side. Oh, the stars and bars will never be forgot. On our state flag, the X marks the spot. It took bravery to fight for slavery. That's how we're inclined, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Always left behind, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Jackson, it's Anglo-Saxon no more. Macon, you be shaken when you go to the store. Throughout our states, there is this deep divide, 'cause our kinfolk were on the losing side. Yeah, our kinfolk were on the losing side. just the losing kind. Oh, we love our flag, it says to us who we are. We got no fancy house, we got no fancy car. It takes bravery to forget about slavery. We don't watch, we rewind.
This is Le Show, and you know that the President of the United States, Bush, is it, went to Australia this week for a summit meeting. In his opening remarks, he referred to the Australian troops in Iraq as Austrian troops, and there was also this.
Good morning, or should I say good day. Mr. Prime Minister, thank you for your introduction. Thank you for being such a fine host for the OPEC summit. I appreciate APEC summit. He invited me to the OPEC summit next year. The APEC summit.
Hard for him to invite him to the OPEC summit, since neither the United States nor Australia are a member of OPEC. They could be, I guess, observers. Anyway, this is also the week when a book came out, a biography of President Bush. It's called Dead Certain. And in it, we learned that he's prone to bouts of crying caused by the stress of his job and claims to have seen ghosts emerge from the Lincoln bedroom. George Bush we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. Quote, I do a lot of crying in this job. I bet I've shed more tears than you can count as president. I'll shed some tomorrow, unquote. The book, Dead Certain. He was so gassed, quote, by a day spent riding his mountain bike and swimming on his ranch that he was unable to ask any questions during the video conference the day before Katrina made landfall. Had to explain that. He also said he was going to spend his post-presidential time trying to, quote, replenish the old coffers, unquote, by speaking on the lecture circuit where he can make, quote, ridiculous, unquote, money. The ghost deal comes from 1992 when his father was president. George W. Bush found the White House a creepy place. After exercising in a White House gym one evening, he told a friend he froze in his steps while approaching the Lincoln bedroom. He says, quote, he saw ghosts coming out of the wall, according to the friend. The president was in a chipper mood when he arrived in Australia. He told the Deputy Prime Minister of Australia about things in Iraq. Quote, we're kicking ass, unquote, the President of the United States. And there probably was a phone call shortly after that.
Ass-kicking eagle. Hey, 43, what's happening with the language down under? Always the same. What's coming out of my mouth might be a little bit different. But
being serious, Sprout.
Yeah.
Isn't your base ticked off enough without you talking locker room language in front of other world leaders? Hate to talk like a dad here, but...
Well, good thing I'm 6,000 miles away, or you might wash my mouth out with Lysol again.
Wouldn't do that to you, 43. Barb uses some green cleaner now.
Well, you know, I was just feeling the need to give a kind of Petraeus report to these people down here. Mm-hmm. Now that the Brits are turning back into three pinky tea sippers, these Austrians are pretty much the best allies we got, and I just thought they needed a little pep talk.
You mean Australian?
Yeah, well, they use the long word form or the short one. They're good people. They're real friends. They need to know that we're kicking something. And, I don't know, 41, you getting in on the piling on, too?
Well,
I mean, it's bad enough I have John Warner wanting to pull out and Larry Craig wanting to do the opposite. Just makes a fella want to puddle up a little bit here.
You okay, son? Read in that book that you're crying a lot. Thought it was strange. Never seen it. Not since your 40-keg weekend after high school graduation.
Yeah, well, 41, just to be absolutely fair about the whole thing, you're not exactly the person the guy wants around when he gets his tear ducts quacking. Especially an ass-kicking kind of guy.
43, you're still the most powerful person in the world. Seriously, what do you have to cry about?
Well,
I know that you've got the weight of running a war on your shoulders, and try not to spend all your time commiserating with the bereaved loved ones and all.
No, that I'm handling okay. Not really spending too much of my time on that at all. Very disciplined.
So? I mean, sure, your popularity rating is about on a par with Nixon, but, you don't think that he... Well, tell you the truth, yes, he did walk around the White House blubbering in his coat sleeve every once in a while, but that was only after those 4 martini dinners he liked to have, and you're not...
No, I'm not. But see, 4-1, there's this whole thing of the Petraeus report.
Yeah, well, that's well under control.
Yeah.
Your shop is right in that.
Well,
it's not.
Dick Cheney kind of took over that account.
Wait a minute. Your people aren't even writing the report that's coming out under the name of your own general?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it was the chain man himself or one of his good people. You know, yeah. Dave Addington, good man,
yeah.
Working hard. But on the one hand, washing the other makes me a little sad that, after all, the way this war thing goes is a kind of big factor in my future.
Shape your legacy in history, you mean?
Oh, there's that. Also going to affect what I can charge on the lecture circuit after I leave office, don't you think?
Son, always thought talking about what a person gets paid is crap. Not going to change now. But certainly, you or one of your people told Cheney or one of his people that this should be your project.
Oh, I called a Dexter myself.
And?
He put Addington on, that fella. He's such a good lawyer. He could have gotten O.J. and the Simpsons off half a dozen other murders. And he just goes into this, hey, we've gotten you this far. Maybe we know what we're doing by now sort of thing.
And?
Well, hate to do this. John Howard might come in and see me like this.
Mm-hmm.
Bet he never cries. Of course, he's only got 500 troops over there, but, they're hard-working troops.
Mm-hmm.
Just sometimes I start wondering, what made me get into this whole deal in the first place?
Whole presidency deal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, now I know I'm stuck in it because I'm part of God's plan for the Middle East, but, before all that eruptified...
Look, Sprout, you've read enough to know.
Read more than Carl.
Sure you have.
Got through this big John Adams bibliography before Carl got out of chapter 2.
Well, of course, that's something to be proud of.
Matter of fact, by the time he was finished with the damn book, I'd been done with it for so long, I could hardly remember it. But, yeah, you were saying about my reading?
Mm-hmm. Just, you've read enough to know a lot of people describe where you are right now as the loneliest job in the world.
Oh, I know it. I just thought they were referring to the fact it was harder to go out for dinner.
And there's that, too, but...
Look, 4-1, don't cry for me, Archer Daniels. I got a lot of ass left to kick.
Sure you do.
It's just, sometimes at night after, Laura's put on all that green stuff on her face and gone to bed,
mm-hmm.
I start hearing these voices.
Voices?
Yeah, coming out of the Lincoln bedroom. sounds like Lincoln talking about me, talking about things like, you know, what kind of code name I'm going to have for tomorrow, what my schedule is, things like that.
Don't think it's possible it's one of your Secret Service people you're hearing.
Yeah, except for one thing. Why would he sound like Lincoln?
Yeah, that's a good question, 43. Yeah. Well, look, just try to get through this summit without getting the name of the summit wrong anymore. And consider it a success.
Thanks, 41.
Oh, for what, 43?
For giving me something to aim high for. Hey, tell Mom I said, good day, mate.
Might just do that. You take care, 43.
Not enough smoke in my cigarette, not enough Joe in my cup, not enough early to get there yet, not enough late to give up, not enough time to lag behind, not enough room to pass, not enough mile markers to make me not mine, it's just not enough road, not enough gas, you know the rise is a little rough, but I'm trying to hang tough, I know it might be too much of that stuff, too much is not enough. Not enough fun to put me up enough, not enough down to get out, not enough nerve to try to run a bluff, not enough cards to talk about, not enough wild cards to build a hand, not enough tame cards to make a play, not enough guts to try to make my stand, not enough brains to get up and walk away, you know the ride's a little rough, but I'm trying to hang tough, I know it might be too much of that stuff, too much is not enough. Realize not enough willpower to make me do it, not enough won't power not to, don't blame nobody or nothing for leading me to it, I'm gonna do what I do cause I got to the ride a little rough, and I'm trying to hang tough, I know it might be too much of that stuff, too much is not enough.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Think of it.
We're so sorry.
So many apologies, so little time. Apple CEO Steve Jobs apologized this week and offered $100 credits to customers who shelled out $599 for the most advanced model of the iPhone, only to have the company unexpectedly slash the price by $200 for holiday giving. In a letter on the company's website, Jobs acknowledged that Apple disappointed some of its customers by cutting the price, thereby proving what wise people early adopters are. Said he's received hundreds of emails complaining about the price cut. But Jobs added, quote, "The technology road is bumpy, and there will always be people who pay top dollar for the latest electronics, but get angry later when the price drops. This is life in the technology lane," said Jobs. Do what to me? And Microsoft apologized this week for a problem that caused some visitors to its MSN site in Taiwan to be directed to a non-Microsoft site. Microsoft took immediate and appropriate action and has resolved the issue, says Microsoft's security program manager. Microsoft apologizes for any inconvenience this may have caused to the customer. For a time, users who tried to link to MSN's website in Taiwan were directed to a personal web page, whose author claimed that, quote, someone at Microsoft messed up, unquote. Jerry Lewis apologized this week, quote, during the 21.5-hour live broadcast of my telethon for the Muscular Dystrophy Association, I made a joking comment to a member of my production team. The joking comment involved Jerry introducing fictional characters in the production team members' family, including the, quote, illiterate fag, unquote. Jerry's statement continues, I apologize to anyone who was offended. I obviously made a bad choice of words. Everyone who knows me understands I hold no prejudice in this regard. In the family atmosphere, the telethon atmosphere, I forget that not everyone knows me that well. I accept responsibility for what I said. There are no excuses. I am sorry. The Walt Disney Company is sticking with the 18-year-old star of the wildly successful High School Musical franchise despite her lapse in judgment, quotes, in posing for racy photos that were leaked to the internet. Vanessa Hudgens apologized Friday for the photos which show her smiling as she posed naked and in underwear in a bedroom with a red curtain behind her. Vanessa has apologized for what was obviously a lapse in judgment, said the Disney Channel spokeswoman. We hope she's learned a valuable lesson, unquote. Yes, she has. Disney won't fire you if you make him a lot of money. Dateline San Diego. The Roman Catholic Diocese of San Diego has agreed to pay almost $200 million to settle 144 claims of sexual abuse by clergy, the second largest payment, second only to L.A. Hey, California rules in the diocese payment department. The diocese abruptly filed for bankruptcy protection just hours before a trial was scheduled to begin on the 42 lawsuits alleging sexual abuse. At a news conference, Bishop Robert Brom apologized to victims. Quote, I'm very, very sorry for the suffering we've caused them, and I pray they will walk with God for a renewed life, he said. Adding, the Catholic God would be good. No, he didn't. Speaking of religious apologies, Juanita Bynum, the televangelist who was beaten by her husband, Bishop Thomas Weeks, in an Atlanta hotel parking lot, says she still loves her husband, but the event has triggered the end of their marriage. She said it wasn't the first time something like this came up in the marriage. This was not the first time we had a physical altercation between the bishop and the televangelist. The bishop, Bishop Weeks, has apologized. Bishop Weeks has been indicted on felony and misdemeanor charges stemming from the attack on his televangelist wife. The mayor of Tonganoxie, Kansas, is apologizing after admitting he sent a pornographic email from his computer, and he says if those who voted him into office want him to resign over this, he will. Mike Vestal forwarded an email to a list of undisclosed recipients. The message shows a topless woman and reads, Next Monday is National Female Breast Appreciation Day. Beats the expletive out of Martin Luther King Day, doesn't it? Unquote. Vestal said he did intend to send the email to a few people, but not to a reporter for a local TV station. I hope the citizens understand it was a mistake, Mayor Vestal said, an honest mistake, and I'm very sorry, and I'm very upset. I'm very embarrassed for myself. Environmental group Riverkeeper, whose official was quoted earlier in this broadcast, I think, apologized in a Dear Friends letter for sending a 150-page unreadable fax transmission last month. They were sending out a one-page press release, but a technical glitch at the faxing service triggered the torrent of paper. Needless to say, as an environmental organization, we were horrified not only to cause such inconvenience to our friends like you, but also at the thought of wasting so much paper. The apology arrived in the form of a one-page fax. Mattel has apologized for the third time for recalling a new batch of toys containing excessive levels of lead paint. Made in, say it with me, China. And in a major break for the federal investigation into the abuse of Louisiana's movie industry incentives program, former state movie industry recruiter Mark Smith pleaded guilty in federal court this week to accepting cash bribes from a film producer in exchange for boosting lucrative tax breaks. Smith said he was sorry for his crime and the tarnish it has left on Louisiana's Motion Picture Development Program. He has been cooperating with prosecutors in the investigation. So a lot of heads are under their desks this weekend in New Orleans. Smith said there was no excuse for his actions, but said he accepted the bribes at a time when he was, quote, vulnerable financially. Good people sometimes do bad things, Smith said after his court appearance. No one knows the pain I'm going through every day. I betrayed the trust of my family and the people of the state of Louisiana. I'm sorry. And WLW Radio Cincinnati host Bill Cunningham apologized in person to Cincinnati Reds outfielder Adam Dunn Wednesday for saying that Dunn played drunk in a game in Pittsburgh. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And one more apology from ABC's middle-of-the-night TV newscast.
We should mention, while on the subject of Owen Wilson, I wanted to take a moment to apologize. It's something that occurred 2 days ago. We were joking, as we often do during commercial break, and the laughter spilled out into the very serious story about Owen Wilson. It was completely inappropriate, and I definitely want to apologize to Owen Wilson.
And his family, and to you guys. Sorry about that. Sometimes it's 3 in the morning and the caffeine gets to us, but we do apologize. That clearly
crossed. Certainly we were not laughing at the situation.
No, of course not. It's the caffeine. Lack of storage facilities for spent nuclear fuel is becoming a headache for South Korea's atomic power generation. 70% of existing facilities have already been filled with high-level radioactive waste from nuclear power plants across the country. Clean, safe, plentiful, and cheap. Just we don't know where to put the stuff. Build them a yucca. Well, that concludes this week's edition of the show. I'll be back with you next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on XM and Sirius satellite radios, available as a free download at www.audible.com/the show and available as a troublesome podcast at kcrw.com. Hey, if the podcast doesn't work for you, just go to mydamnchannel.com. And it would be just like Junior beating Junior Junior, or vice versa. Versa, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All right, thank you very much. HarryShearer.com is a place to go for emailing this broadcast. You'll also find playlists for the music played on this broadcast at HarryShearer.com. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO New Orleans. One of the many places around the country where the show is heard on the digital channel, too. I want to get one email from somebody who hears me on HD radio, and then I'll stop laughing at that whole concept. And thanks to Pam Halstead, as always. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.